time for Coffee with the Chicken Ladies, a podcast for people who love chickens.
Hey, everybody, and welcome. It's Chrissy and Holly from Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. We're here, and this is episode number 178 of our podcast, where we talk about everything chicken, family, fun, and
more chickens.
More chickens. We drink a ton of coffee. I'm talking a ton. But most importantly,
we hug chickens every day.
And we kiss them too. Don't forget. We brew coffee from a little coffee house in historic Bel Air, Maryland. Holly Ann, what kind of coffee are we brewing today?
Well, today is the delicious chocolate caramel.
And it is delicious. Are you ready to sip some of this coffee and chat?
I am. But first, a word from our sponsor.
We have some exciting news to share from our sponsor, Grubly Farms. They're here, new and improved, Grubly's World Harvest.
I'm a longtime subscriber, and my flock love the healthy, nutritious treats, plus orders $40 and more ship free.
If you haven't heard, Grubly's has a fantastic layer pellet and crumble feed. It's packed with plant and insect protein, perfect for those picky chickens and ducks.
Grubly Farms makes food and treats for healthy pets and planet.
To support us and Grubly's, go to our website or our show notes and use the link. Try it today. Okay, so how are you doing?
Very well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Excellent.
Okay, so by the time this comes back, I better have hot water. But as it stands right now, we're waiting for the warehouse to have the hot water heater. And we had some people ask on Insta, no, I do not have water yet.
You do not?
Nope. It's I have problem. Water. I don't have hot water.
No, what?
Iceberg. Dead eye.
What everyone else doesn't know is that last Friday at 7 p.m., my water stopped completely. We were completely waterless. Pete was in the middle of shaving. And I heard him say, honey.
There's a problem.
There's a problem.
And the thing was, I was going to come to your house and get a shower.
I know.
I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding
me. Suddenly, you looked like you were in a better position than I was.
I was for just 2 days.
Now, the plumbers did come out on Monday morning and they did find the problem. And we're back to normal. I will say this, though. This is going to drop a couple of weeks after we've gotten our chicks. But as you and I record this right now, our chicks are coming next week.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't have hot water by then, you can come and get a huge hot shower and your chicks. You'll be golden.
Oh, my God. So, I mean, here, it happened over a weekend, so we had to wait to have, and we have a home warranty company, right?
Right.
So then we had to wait for them the next day. Then the plumber came out and said, okay, you need a new one. Then they said they ordered it. Then we called and checked, and they said, no, the home warranty company said, no, we need to talk to the plumber again. And we're like, this was 4 days ago. What the heck are you talking about? And now we're just waiting for it to come in. It's been a fiasco of cold water.
A fiasco is a good word for it. It
Lord.
Really has been.
I've never missed hot water so much in my life.
It's been a while now.
Hot water, I've missed you so much. Come back to me. Don't leave me.
It's hard to be without hot water. It's just hard.
Both situations. At least yours was only like 2.5 days. Thank God.
It felt like longer, but yeah.
I'm like, come on, a hot shower. That seems like, if you asked me, like, would you pay $1 million for a hot shower right now? I'd say yes. I don't have $1 million.
You can come to my house to shower anytime you want.
It's an hour away, though.
I know. That's the problem.
It's a longer drive. If everybody, I don't know if you know this or not, but we do live 50 to 55 minutes away. So the studio.
What's the 50 to 55? The speed at which you drive it?
Oh, yeah. I'm a faster driver than you.
You are, yeah. I'm kind of a
granny. I live
driver.
Life in the fast lane, baby.
You do. It's true.
Sometimes when I'm driving Holly some places, I notice her gripping the.
You know what? I wish I could pretend that didn't happen, but it does. But, I'll be hanging on the handle.
But when we went on our road trip to Ohio, I was gripping that side of the door for a few because.
Oh, you know what? Cry me a river.
You were like, I've got this. I'm not sure. I'm not sure
river.
At this moment in time if you have this or not.
I was sure.
I was not.
Are you alive? Was there an accident?
Thank God there was no accident.
Well.
I am alive. But yeah. Oh my gosh. So yeah, the chicks are going to be arriving as this is playing probably.
Right.
So be looking for some chick spam coming at you.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Most definitely.
And you'll be seeing all of our babies.
Oh geez, yeah. I don't know if it's realistic, but I'm hoping by the time this drops, most of my animals are shorn.
I don't think it's realistic, man.
Okay.
I don't think it is.
April 23rd, maybe not. Maybe no. By May 1st, I'll have everyone
maybe,
shorn.
Maybe.
If I'm lucky.
Okay, so on that note, if you're listening to our show and you're loving it, head on over to Apple Podcast and leave us a written review. It does amazing things for the growth of our show, and we love to read your kind words. It makes us smile. It makes us happy. And while you're there, hit that subscribe button because, you know, they count them. And go over to Spotify if you listen there and hit the 5 stars because they count them over there too. And subscribe. It's free. It helps us.
A gigantic thank you. We've had 2 reviews recently that were international. One from Canada, one from the UK.
I know, and they don't show them, and we love them. So thank you.
We can see them when we're tracking on Chartable, but they don't show up on regular old Apple Podcasts, unfortunately. Nope. But thank you. We've seen them and we love you.
Yes, definitely.
If you're looking for other ways to support the show, you can tell a few chicken-loving friends about us.
Do you have 500?
You can share your favorite episodes on social media. You can visit our Etsy shop, t-shirts, and mugs. You can become a patron of the show, patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies.
It's almost tank time season, too. Go get a tank.
Yeah. And the other thing you can do to help support the show is visit our website and our show notes, use our affiliate links and discount codes, and buy products from our sponsors.
Yay!
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Do you like subscription boxes?
Does it have anything to do with chickens?
Of course.
Then yeah. Let me take a minute to tell you about the Chicken Love Box. If you love goodies for your chickens and you need to go to chickenlove.com.
I love the Mega Box. Tons of useful products for my flock and a chicken tea for me.
You can't go wrong with a chicken tea. They are so cute and so soft.
In the February box, I absolutely love the spray bottle of Bye Bye Boo Boos and the Rooster Cheese Spreader Knife.
I love the Chicken Lady Era hat and tea. They're great. And you can't go wrong with that coffee with the Chicken Lady's mug.
Boxes start at $39 a month. They ship immediately after your order and shipping is always free.
Such a great deal. Don't wait. Get off the nest and click already. Use the code CWTCL50 for 50% off your first box of a 3-month subscription or more. That's chickenlove.com. That's chickenluv.com. Get your subscription today.
The Breed Spotlight is brought to you by Murray McMurray Hatchery, defining quality for generations. For over a century, Murray McMurray Hatchery has remained a trusted family-owned business, working tirelessly to ensure our poultry meet the highest standards.
Whether you are an experienced enthusiast or just embarking on the journey, look to McMurray Hatchery for guaranteed quality, rare and heritage breeds, low minimums, and all the supplies you need to raise your flock. Request a free catalog today.
La, 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 it's time for Breed Spotlight, y'all.
Oh, shoot, yeah.
Okay, well, you said last week was a little lackluster.
No, I said it was generic. I didn't say lackluster.
Well, whatever. It means the same. So we went grand. We went grand today.
And this week's Breed Spotlight is... the Malay, or more correctly pronounced, the Malay.
Yeah, I'm calling it the Malay Man.
You're incorrect, though.
It's okay. It's okay. It's all good.
When we were at the Ohio National Poultry Show in Ohio...
Was it in Ohio?
In Ohio, in November of 2023, we talked.
Oh, yeah.
We talked with Mr. Craig Russell. Craig Russell he's a historian of many breeds.
Oh, he is.
He had a pair of Malays at the show.
And he did correct me.
He did. And me too. He said it's
pronounced. And he had a giant apple in with each one of them.
Malay. He did.
That's all I remember.
And the cockerel was like, yeah, that's good.
It was like a supersized apple on steroids. And I was like, damn.
Well, that's a supersized chicken.
It was.
So anyway, the correct pronunciation, if you're wondering, is Malay, as in Malaysia.
Right. But you can say Malay if you like.
Chrissy has given you permission to pronounce it incorrectly.
Oh, you have permission to say it.
I have been saying Malay for over 20 years. So I try to get it right, but I forget. So...
hey, it's spelled Malay.
Malay. No, it's spelled Malay.
It is.
As in Malaysia.
It is, but I'm saying Malay Man.
Oh, my God.
Malay, Malay, I have cold water. Send the hot water, Malay.
We are breaking down fast over here. Breaking down fast.
Just some fun.
The Malay is a critically endangered heritage breed of chicken, and they may be one of the very oldest chickens in existence.
Oh, yeah.
They're known for their height. At 30 inches, they are the tallest chicken breed. They are also known for their service as a crucial foundation breed for many types of chicken, many of the most popular types of chicken, including the Brahma and the Rhode Island Red.
That's their biggest job. And I'm talking biggest.
Because that's a big chicken.
So, I mean, yeah, they're known for being a foundation breed.
And they really are.
That's how they've contributed to the chicken world.
You will not soon forget a Malay once you have laid eyes on them.
And their big old apple.
I can't even get it. I think the apple is optional. Optional apple.
They like apples.
Most chickens like apples.
Oh, yeah. I'm always afraid that I don't want them to eat the seeds.
Yeah, like, you would have to give them like a bucket of seeds.
Like, look, just don't eat the seeds, okay?
I've got an apple tree over top of one of my runs.
Of course you do.
Of course I do.
Because you love the heritage breed apples.
Well, they're considered heirlooms. They're not heritage breeds. Trees.
I like to call them heritage breed apples.
A heritage breed apples.
Everything's a heritage breed. A heritage breed peach for you. A heritage breed apple for you.
Yes.
Heritage breed tomatoes, like better I known said, as heirlooms.
It's breaking down faster here. I've completely lost control of the studio. Okay.
I'm taking over.
The Malay were first accepted by the American Poultry Association and appeared in the Standard of Perfection in 1883 in the black-breasted red variety.
It's a black-breasted red variety.
I actually think the black-breasted red's a really pretty colorway on a lot of chickens.
It's easier to say with an accent, the black-breasted red.
Is it? Also of note, the Malay was the first breed to be bantamized.
Wow.
Is bantamized a word?
You go from giant to like tiny.
Right. It's your T-Rex and your Velociraptor all wrapped into one. I'm kind of troubled by bantamized. Is that really a word?
I don't know.
He was bantamized.
It sounds like something bad.
Like their name implies, the Malay was developed in Asia. In various sources, including Lewis Wright and Dr. Joseph Barber, who was a contemporary writer, it's suggested that the Malay is an ancestor of an even bigger race of poultry known as the Gallus gigantus.
Gigantus!
That has since gone extinct.
Man, I wish the gigantus was out there.
I'm telling you what, right?
Bring your gigantus with you.
That doesn't sound very good. Keep your gigantus over there. I'm not entirely sure how this ties into the whole red jungle fowl theory, though. It does make you wonder, because jungle fowl are very small and shy birds.
They're very small.
They weigh like between 2.5 and 3.5 pounds.
I mean, they weren't bantamized either.
No. So they were not bantamized. So how would the Malay and the Asil and the Shamo have developed from the red jungle fowl? I mean, I think you need some DNA to
give you some answers there. Giant, like, I mean, I don't know what it even came in there and said, okay, let's get it on.
Cue the Barry White.
Let's create
my the melee.
And then the melee will create lots of birds, but let's get it on.
But I can't even talk now. But seriously, think about it. Jungle fowl to leghorn, I can get. Jungle fowl to shamo or Malay, I cannot get.
I mean, that's a big jump.
That's a big jump. Anyway, so just putting that out there. The Malay began showing up in the UK around 1830. Generally, they came in on trading ships.
Yeah.
They were popular with poultry collectors.
I mean, they're odd looking.
Yeah, they're interesting.
They're beautiful. Interesting. They're different.
Very different. So they were very popular with like the poultry collectors who were always looking to add more exotic birds.
Somebody
to their
flock. Somebody came down and said, oh, that is quite the odd looking bird. I'd like to take them home.
It's exotic. I want to take it home.
So exotic.
Oh my God.
I've had way too much coffee
today. This episode brought to you by Barry White. The Malay showed up in the U.S. in the late 1840s. For a while, they were very popular, like in the late 1800s.
Yeah.
But then they started to slip into relative obscurity, being used mostly for crossbreeding.
I mean, that's what they're known for.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's an important thing to be known for, as you are the foundation for so many other breeds that are loved today.
Well, there's a biodiversity issue there.
Without you, they would not exist.
Without me?
Without the bird.
They're kind of like a curio, you know? They're not a practical chicken. They are definitely a treasure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you are like they're different. And anything different and exotic is good sometimes, you know? They're just being them. They have the giant, like, dinosaur legs. Boom, boom, boom. I mean, like, you have to have housing, though. You have to have bigger housing for them. You have to make a run that can suit them. It's the different from the bantams to the malins.
It's very, very different. It is.
So, you know, I mean, but they are known to have, you know, a little bit spicy a personality. But if you can handle that, they would be good.
Right. Now, the appearance of this chicken matches their ancient history. Because if you think dinosaur, you'll be on the right track.
They look like a dinosaur.
They do.
Like a mini dinosaur.
Right.
And they're very tall. And they're gamey looking.
Yeah.
So, you know, they have close and hard feathering and long, and I'm talking long, muscular yellow legs.
They really do.
I mean, they have sexy chicken legs. Is that a thing?
Rooster sexy?
No, sexy legs. There's rooster yellow sexy legs.
Rooster sexy legs.
Show your rooster yellow legs.
He got legs
and knows how to use them. I mean, you got legs for years in this chicken.
How have we gone from an ancient chicken to ZZ Top? I don't know what's happening in the studio today.
We're 80s kids. That's why.
That's probably.
So they do have a broad skull, the bone protruding out over the eyes, giving them that mean look.
Yes.
But they're not. They can be, but maybe they're not. Okay. I want to give them the benefit.
Okay. So here's what Craig Russell said.
His were very nice.
His were, yes. And he said, I really liked the hen to the point. I liked the hen so much that I thought I could have a melee hen.
But when you asked him to take one of them out, he was like, no, thank you.
Well, he said they're not bad. He said compared to an Aziel, he called the Aziels homicidal maniacs. He said they're not that bad. But, you know, that's a big, strong bird. And
he did not want to take that bird out.
No. I'm sure for good reason. So where were we?
We were at their mean look. But
well, that is shared by the Brahmas because they're definitely a foundation breed for the Brahmas. So people say Brahmas have that brooding, beetle-browed
beetle-browed look
to them. Yes.
Okay. So let's look in. Their faces and the front of their long necks are featherless and red. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're very interesting. The only words I can find to describe them is different, interesting, exotic. All these things come to them.
Very unique. They're a very unique bird.
Now, their eyes are either orange or pearl colored.
They have that jutting brow bone. It kind of gives them they look like they're glowering at you.
Or
they're not.
Yeah. They look like they're pissed all the time.
They do.
And they have a smallish kind of strawberry comb and a stout, sharp yellow beak.
It looks pretty intimidating, honestly.
I mean, they could take you down.
Yeah.
They'll be like, call me something. I'm going to take you down. Meet me outside. So their tail is kind of sparse and slants downward. Okay. And, you know, the standard of perfection calls for the roosters to weigh in at about 9 pounds and the hens at about 7 pounds. They're not the heaviest of chickens.
Right. But they are tall.
They're tall. They're big bone. They're the definition of a big bone chicken.
You know, they really are, actually.
They need the husky.
A big and tall section. You know, Queen Elizabeth had those Cochin Chinas, and her first Cochin Chinas were not the Cochins we think of today.
Right.
Very confusingly, those were Shanghais. But her original Cochin Chinas, and I'll have to find a photo of it to stick up on our web page for this episode, they were very Malay-like.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand why she was so fascinated with them, that she was in her aviary all the time.
Right.
They're just really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, they're different.
Yeah.
And anything different is going to bring, you know, a point of, you know, looking at them in a different way and trying to understand them a different way.
Yeah.
So let's look at the APA accepted colors. Okay.
Uh-huh.
They're black.
Black-breasted red.
The red pile.
Spangled.
The wheaten.
And white.
So yes, you can get them in a plethora of colors.
Spangled. The spangled are very pretty in their own way. I quite like them.
I like a spangled chicken.
Yes.
So here's the thing. The hens aren't great layers, okay?
Surprise.
Surprise, surprise. They haven't been selected for egg production, like so many modern breeds. So if you're lucky, you're going to get about 80 to 100 per year. Now, if you want to have them because you want to have a different chicken, you want to take in their beauty, their long yellow muscular legs.
Yes.
All these other reasons, then you could feel lucky that you're going to get 80 to 100 eggs.
Right.
The other thing is this chicken does need assistance. It needs help. You know, so if you want to get them for other reasons besides egg laying, look at the egg laying as a plus. Right.
But what else about the eggs?
What else?
they actually lay a dark brown egg.
So if you want to, you know, not have a Marans or another...
Who else lays the dark brown egg that we just talked about?
Barnevelder.
Oh, the Penadisanca.
Yeah. So you could add the Malay in. So they'll add to your rainbow flock of eggs.
I was astonished when I read that they laid a dark brown egg.
That, I mean, I wonder, I've never seen the size of an egg. If you're out there and you have one, send us a picture of what size the egg is.
Please.
We would love to see it.
Yeah.
Okay. So surprisingly, they do go broody.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
It's like a dinosaur on the nest.
It's like 100 eggs under that chicken.
Not really. Well, they can't cover that many. That's
because they don't have a lot of feathering.
Exactly.
They've but, got I mean, they got a large kind of body to put on them, but they don't have the feathering to do it.
Got no fluff.
They got no fluff around that fluff of butt. This is not your typical chicken, and that's why this breed spotlight has gone a little bit off the wire, because it's not your typical chicken.
No, they're extremely unique. They are something much more rare, and they are in very real need of conservation help.
They're something that should be celebrated. They have been used to create some of our most beloved chickens. So for that reason alone, let's help them out. If you can add a Malay to your flock or two, do it.
Some people say that the Aziel is the oldest breed of chicken. Other people say there's no way you can know. Some people say it's the Malay. Does it matter? They're both really, really old.
Old and tall, man.
Very tall. Generally speaking, the Malay is probably not a bird that you can easily mix into a backyard flock. But the only circumstances where we know that happened easily was with a single Malay hen.
Right.
So, yeah. The cockerels and roosters can become combative amongst themselves and other breeds.
Oh, yeah.
And while they're actually pretty good with people, they can even become fond of their people. We would not trust them with children ever, ever, ever.
They're large and children are small.
And children make squeaky noises and do things that roosters interpret as a threat.
Right.
So just don't put anyone in that position.
Right. And if I would say if you have them, have their own separate flock without more than one rooster and just a bunch of hens.
Yeah.
That's the best way to do it. I mean, their story isn't like one of these over-the-top incredible stories, but what you have to do is thank them for helping us create our most beloved chickens.
Absolutely.
Rhode Island Red, the Brahma. Yeah. I mean, lots of chickens. They're in the foundation breeds.
I mean, if they're thousands of years old, I'm sure they have some fascinating history. We just don't know what it is.
And some really good stories to tell you.
No doubt they have some stories. Like that time I came around the corner, that guy saw me and he had a heart attack right there.
It was like, what is that?
That thing.
What is that? It's not a chicken.
I just want some corn.
Okay, so now everybody's asking themselves, where can I get the Malay?
Yeah, that's really tough. That's another big problem. I would start with the APA because people who are breeding Malays, and it may only be Craig Russell at this point. I would also check the Livestock Conservancy's Breeders Directory. If you have trouble there, throw an email out to, you know, some of the folks that work for the Conservancy. They might know of someone they can put you in contact with.
That's the problem. Availability. We talk about it all the time. These chickens that need help, they're not readily available.
And this, again, this is a special chicken. This isn't a chicken that's just like, it's not like picking up, a speckled Sussex and tossing it into your flock.
No, you have to have special provisions.
Very special chicken, yeah.
Yeah, you have to really do some good care with them. Not that you don't do good care with everybody, but, you know, different.
A little different, yeah. You have to think about these guys and gals a little differently.
Okay, so here's a part of the show where I say to you, if you have the Malay, we want to see your pictures. So what we want you to do is go on Instagram, do a story, and hit the mention button, and then type in Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. And then it shares your story to us, and it allows me to reshare it to our story so everybody else can see it. So if you have them, share your stories. We would love, love, love to see them.
If you're looking for a chicken coop that's produced in a planet-friendly, sustainable way, try Nestera.
Each coop is made from highly durable, 100% recycled plastic that keeps the equivalent of up to 2,000 shampoo bottles out of a landfill.
Their clean, modern design will fit into any garden or run area and comes with an industry-beating 25-year warranty and a range of handy accessories.
Simple to put together, so quick and easy to clean, and most importantly, red mite resistant. Your chickens will love it.
Quick shipping from Nestera.us.
For a 5% discount, use the affiliate link in our show notes, on our website, and on Instagram. Link in bio. Check them out today. Roosties proudly sponsors Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. They're back with an innovative new product. You're going to want to check this out.
It's an extra large set. a 14-pound feeder and 3-gallon water with steep anti-roost lids. They're made of super durable material. You can either stand them on legs or hang them on brackets on your coop or fence. They're easy to remove and clean too. Plus, they look awesome.
We personally use Roosties and we're huge fans. So if you're raising chicks or keeping chickens, check out the Roosty store on Amazon or follow the link in our show notes.
UK chicken lovers, this one's for you. Get happy, healthy hens with EcoNourish's live calci worms. Enrichment, nutrition, and protection in one tasty, sustainable pack. Scientifically proven to support glossy feathers, strong laying and skeletal health,
protect from disease, and improve gut health and immunity. You'll also bust flock stress by stimulating natural instincts and get eco bragging rights. Visit econourish.co.uk and use the code COFFEE15 for 15% off your first order. Your chickens and the planet will hug you for it. So, are we ready to move on to main topic? Yeah.
Today, we are thrilled to welcome back Tricia Stone Schumacher. Tricia is mom to Poppy the Crossbeak. You may have seen him on social media, The Adventures of Poppy. Tricia is joining us today. We're going to talk a little bit about crossbeaks. Tricia's work as a speech therapist, where she uses the chickens in her office. We're going to talk about those really tangible effects the chickens can have when it comes to therapy with people. Tricia, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, ladies. It's always so nice to see you and visit with you guys.
Hello, sweet friend. Welcome back. It's so good to have you.
So nice to be here.
So we're going to start off, just because we have a lot of new listeners, we're going to ask you to just give a quick definition of crossbeak and chickens. Just talk a little bit about that, please.
And tell us about Poppy.
Oh, yes. So Poppy, he's actually an Americana rooster. He was hatched right at the end of March. We actually celebrate his birthday, April 1st of 2020. He was a COVID baby. And so during that time, we ended up getting 8 chicks so we can start our backyard flock. And Poppy was one of the 8. But when we got him, he was just typical chicken. He didn't have any special needs that were any visible signs at all until about maybe 2 or 3 days old. And his beak started crossing. That's where the upper and lower beaks do not align. And over time, crossbeaks can grow more and more severe. Poppy's is the most severe, where his upper beak grows and just keeps growing down, and it does have to be trimmed on occasion. And then the lower beak goes to the far left. And the reason being is a chicken's beak is not separate from the skull. It's attached to the skull. So if it's more severe, then that cross beak ends up being where the chicken can't even eat on his own. So human intervention had to happen once he was about 1 week old. And I joined a crossbeak group, Crossbeak Poultry in Motion. It's on a Facebook, and ended up learning how to torpedo feed. And it's basically using chicken feed and grinding it up into a flour, like a cookie dough, and you roll it in like a pretzel stick. And I was able to feed him and keep the nutrients. And if I didn't do that, he was already at 1 week old, half the size of the other chicks.
Wow.
And that's why it's so crucial to keep maintaining their weight. He was running around the brooder when we picked him up at the chicken feed store and ended up saying, I wanted that one. I wanted the crazy dude. And I didn't know he was a rooster, but it didn't matter. We were just happy to have him, and I was going to give him a fighting chance. So crossbeaks typically end up getting culled in any other situation. But for me, there was no way I was going to not allow him to have a fighting chance. And so I learned how to feed him. I feed him about 2 to 3 times a day. And because of that, he now lives in the house and he thinks he's a dog or a cat. He's just
He is.
Well,
You just wears diapers, just like his companion Maisie. So you can't have a pet chicken, but I know that the purpose of this is just to learn about what a crossbeak is. But he basically cannot eat on his own. His beak does not align. It never will. You can't have surgery, not like a parrot, because of that attachment of the skull. And so you make do and accommodate. And some crossbeaks can actually eat on their own, but not the most severe. Poppy's is the like 180 angle. He's like the most severe that you can get.
I don't put that out there, that failure to thrive. You didn't give in to that. You fought through a failure to thrive and you found a way. There's always a way to get them through.
You're exactly right. And even crossing over into, let's say, the human world, because I am a therapist and I'm in a helping profession, my mindset is to help, not to make my life easier, right? So it's like with the parents who have, let's say, a child who has a feeding disorder, cerebral palsy, autism, what are they going to do? They're going to make their life as best as possible. They're going to help them. And why is it any different when you have a feathered baby or a fur baby, someone that is a family member, not necessarily human? They deserve a fighting chance. All creatures, great and small, right?
Well, there are two things you told us before we started recording that are kind of amazing. Well, first, I love that you are part of this really thriving community of people who have crossbeak chickens. I want to say even 5 years ago, there weren't this many people with the knowledge to be able to care for these special needs birds. But in Poppy's case, there are two amazing things. The first is that Poppy is 4 years old, which is quite unusual. The other is that Poppy weighs 8 pounds.
That shows you feed him really well.
That is. Well, you know, the breed standard calls for 6.5 pounds for a rooster. So Poppy's 1.5 pounds over. So he is doing very well.
You know, I'm wondering here, thinking about another alternative to Torpedo, which Torpedo is the best because you have the food. But, you know, there is now powder to liquid food. If Crossbeak could have be syringe fed a liquid food multiple times a day also. Is that something that people could do too?
There are options. In fact, part of this Crossbeak group, which I will say, when you're talking about population and knowledge of Crossbeaks, in 2020, when I initiated and searched, how the heck can I help this chick out? I researched, found support, found knowledge-based material, but the primary place was that Crossbeak poultry group. And I believe I joined and there was 700 in the group.
Okay.
There are 6,000 in the group now.
Right.
That's amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So once I learned, I didn't need to have somebody call me. They'll FaceTime you and help you with techniques, the admins of that group. I saw the recipe. I saw the YouTube that they also have linked to the group. And I figured it out, made the food, and I did it. And so I didn't need a lot of assistance. However, for syringe feeding, for tube feeding, that's another one, where you're actually putting like the tube all the way down into their crop. Those can be very dangerous because you want to make sure it's going in the right area.
Right.
But they have availability to FaceTime and assist you if Torpedo feeding is not viable. Now, because of my background as a speech/feeding therapist, I also understand the rule of least restrictive diet. So if a human and or an animal can eat a certain texture, then that's what you want to give them. You don't want to give them liquid. That makes sense. You want their body to have the most normal or the best level of nutrients and texture possible. So Torpedo feeding works for us. I wouldn't necessarily ask somebody or recommend syringe feeding for someone that you can actually help assist and slide the food in a little tiny hole in their mouth. If it's so difficult, there are other options to be able to assist, like wrapping the chicken so they're not flailing. The pressure helps calm their sensory system. So I always recommend Torpedo feeding first, and then the other options, tube feeding, syringe feeding.
If that doesn't work.
Or as needed, if let's say a chicken is sick and they can't open their mouth, then do the swallowing. So, and those are things, if you're doing syringe or tube, guess what happens? You bypass all of the swallowing factors. So they're not exercising their muscles. So again, because of my It's like anything that I do for my business and my profession, you have to kind of carry it over. Yeah. So if I'm a feeding therapist as a career, I kind of add those things. I'll put the torpedo in his mouth kind of halfway. It's like a little pretzel stick. His tongue protrudes out and brings it down. Guess what he's doing? He's exercising his tongue, his swallowing muscles to get the food in. And I have to believe that his is helping. He's thriving still. But there's also the factor that it could either be an injury that caused the crossbeak, and it could be genetics. We've probably determined that his is possibly more of an injury, because when he was in his little brooder, there was a little red dot on his cheek area, and couldn't figure out after we wiped it, if it wasn't really from him or somebody else. But that's when we noticed his beak starting to misalign. So it's possible something tipped over and hit his beak. But the ones that are genetic, they usually don't live past a year old.
I remember you were telling us that last time, way many years ago, when we first started talking about this together, that genetically, if it's a genetic problem, they usually pass away around a year old or so, or just under. So hoping, like, he's thriving. He's our little man over there. We love seeing him. He is so fun. The videos you put up of him are amazing. And I love seeing him thrive. And I love the fact, you know, you just never want to give up on anybody. You know, you just keep going, and you find a way to make them thrive. That's what we do.
Exactly right. And find ways that maintain health and the well-being of even the person doing it. I mean, it works for me. I have my own practice. Poppy, because I have to hand feed him 2 to 3 times a day, he will about 1 or 2 times a week come to work with me. I have that opportunity since I own my own business to bring him with me. But it is difficult. I mean, there are people that it's like, oh my gosh, I have this crossbeak. There's a lot of responsibility there. I'm gone from this time to this time. Is it feasible to keep him? And there are still ways. I mean, there's people that feed as much as they can in the morning, and then once they get home, they try and feed him again. So it's this balancing act of trying to figure out or make it work for you and your lifestyle and what's happening in your own world.
Before we get into talking a little bit more about chickens and therapy, we want you to tell everyone about your latest book, because you have a series of children's books and they all star Poppy the Crossbeak.
Yes, that was one of my first bucket list items I've wanted to do. And it was 20 plus years in the making. Poppy came around in 2020 and I realized, oh my goodness, I have a passion. I have some inspiration now. So I wrote Perfectly Poppy in 2020 and then Patiently Poppy the next year. And it just kept rolling. And I'm on my third book of the series called Proudly Poppy. And Poppy now, he's also in the story, but he now has a companion chicken who he has his own therapy chicken. Well, let me back up. The book is basically about sweet little Maisie, who is our silky hen who lives in the house with Poppy in the real world. And in the story, it basically shows that she's coming to stay. She's coming to his home, and he was so excited. He needed to figure out the perfect gift to get her.
He got her. He got a little wife. He's so happy.
And they just make such a cute couple. And it's hilarious because Poppy's 8 pounds and Maisie is 1 pound. It's more like a sibling thing because there's no mounting or anything. And I don't know if it's because of Poppy being a crossbeak. And I know lots of crossbeaks that still have their hormones. Poppy's never been interested at all. So he like walks around with Maisie and he's never going to injure her because that's not something he's interested in doing, fortunately. But that is the latest story. You can read about Poppy and learn about the book from poppythechicken.com and follow them on social media. I post a lot of cute little videos of them and photos, and it's just fun to watch them. It makes people's day seeing their smiles.
If you have small children or, you know, nieces or nephews or kids yourselves that are young, the children's books are amazing.
Oh, I love it. And I have found a way to blend and overlap my love for chickens and also my passion for my career, because the books are focused on special needs, Perfectly Poppy being unique and different. And I'm talking about his twisted beak, and it's okay to be you. And then the second one is about just helping another being or another chicken if they are in need. And so Poppy came to the rescue. And then this next one is just about introducing new family members. And it could be foster, adoptive. And she's purring right now. Did you hear her?
She is so cute. Just everyone can't see this. We're on Zoom, so we can see Maisie basically curled up next to Trisha on a chair. And she's just content as content can be laying there.
That purring sound is the cutest thing ever. Oh my goodness.
And for those that can't see, Poppy is pecking at my knee right now, but he's just air pets. And he's like just having a grand old time while Maisie is sitting next to me. She's all white and she's sitting on a white stool with a white pillow rest up against, but they both wear diapers. So if they're wondering, why are they in the house and, you know, are they pooping everywhere? They wear chicken diapers. So that's what saves all the mess since we, you know, obviously chickens have an involuntary sphincter.
If anyone's curious, I will put links in the show notes for the Crossbeak Poultry Emotion Group. And I'll put links up to the Poppy Children's books and Trisha and Poppy and Maisie's social media.
Thank you. That would be wonderful.
Let's talk about a little bit how chickens can help people, children, adults, anybody who are suffering from some ailments, whether it's speech like you do or feeding problems. When the chickens come in, do you see a difference in how the people respond to therapy?
Let me give a little foundation. So in my practice, we see approximately 250 patients a week, and the majority of them are children. And Poppy and Maisie will come to the facility about one, maybe two times a week. And what is amazing is the children that come through our clinic, many of them are early intervention age, are not talking for one reason or another. And when they see Maisie and even Poppy from a distance, he's big, so he can be a little scary looking for the little ones. They will see the chickens. They might not say anything yet, but you could see their face. They have these nonverbal cues, and that's important to note because even in the speech world, only 7% of human communication is verbal. 93% is all nonverbal stuff. So when you see this little kiddo's eyes light up and they see Maisie, they immediately want to go over and pet her. They're already doing social engagement. Then they're looking at mom, then looking at the chicken. Guess what? That's joint attention. This is all social skills. These are nonverbal ways to be able to connect with an animal, whether it's a chicken or a dog. You know, there's animal assisted therapy in a variety of animals. I've even been in sessions and I'll go and mirror neurons or even repetition, a child will imitate and go, or something where it's very similar to what I just verbalized. So being able to learn what stages of communication a child should be at, where they are at, how can we get them up to speed? And having the animals there, or when Poppy and Maisie are there, it helps elicit communication. Mm-hmm. And that can be nonverbal, receptive language, understanding what mom is saying. Look over there. Do you see the chicken? You know, and just recognizing, does the child understand receptively what the mom just asked? So receptive communication, expressive communication. It's a chicken. And then expressively do an imitated, you know, a sound effect of what that animal sounds like or what sound they make. So something that sounds so minimal can be so amazing for a family, especially when a lot of these families come into our clinic and parents are disheartened because their child might be three and they're not saying anything. Maybe they don't have a diagnosis yet of, let's say, autism. Let's say they do have a diagnosis of autism. The child is so intrigued with certain sounds or certain toys, concrete objects, not just cards. That was Poppy seeing a dove outside. So Poppy's looking out the window and that was his get off my property. He has an issue with doves.
Oh my God.
Sidebar there. So when a mom is seeing that the child potentially with autism is so engaged with these chickens, it lights up her world, realizing that they just made a connection. I've had families that got chickens because they were so enthralled by Poppy and Maisie.
Wow, that's amazing.
I love it.
It's just amazing overall. It just makes me happy. Poppy and Maisie and any other chicken. I brought other chickens with me too, especially if they're injured or they just need a little more attention and care, then I'll take them to work with me if there's, you know, a foot injury, something that I know that there's nothing that anyone else is going to get or pass along to their chickens.
There's also that feeling that chickens can bring anxiety down, or any animal at that. And chickens fall into that category of, I want to say, emotional support animals, you know, like where they can help you feel more at ease. Say someone is nervous about coming to therapy. You see the chicken and you kind of let go of that fear a little bit and you're all in, you know? So, and then being so loving, I say this in every show, they can receive the love, they can give the love. It helps everybody all the way around.
It does. And in my world, in the therapy world, and it's not just the patients we're working with the families. So it actually multiplies the people that we are reaching out and showing, oh my goodness, animals, these chickens are great for connection for their child. And so they end up possibly getting a pet because of it, because of this love of animals and, you know, being able to get toys that are geared toward them as well. But as far as social engagement, seeing how the chickens are interacting with the families is, it just makes me so happy. And I will say, when I'm working with a child for speech and language tasks, Maisie might be in session, literally on the lap of a mom, and mom is just petting Maisie. And because Maisie is a silky, she doesn't have bona fide feathers. They're brushable. And so I've even given little toothbrushes and let the mom pet and brush Maisie. And literally, it's a 30-minute session. And they start hearing her purring and they just are so relaxed. And so having a child with any level of a diagnosis like autism, they realize that this is like their calm. They didn't realize how much wound up they were or stressed. And just that 30 minutes in session, just holding a chicken is so therapeutic. I mean, you know, after work, what do? We go and hug our chickens.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I can see it's a double whammy almost, because it helps, they help the child or the person in therapy, but also the support person. A lot of people forget about the support people. They get just as stressed as everybody else. So to be able to branch out to them, that 30 minutes of Zen, just petting a silky purring in your lap, that's amazing. And I love that you bring them with you to the office for the therapy.
The people chicken connection, I mean, it's an old one. Scientists believe that chickens have been domesticated for like 10,000 years. So they've lived with us for this long. But I have two recent studies. I thought they were both fascinating in their own ways. The first one was Michigan State University. And what they have is, it's anecdotal, but it's quantifiable evidence that seniors in a nursing home had very marked alleviation of loneliness, which is a real problem for seniors in our country, probably worldwide. They had marked alleviation of loneliness just from having a chicken hang out with them. It is beautiful. The other study, and again, they'll be linked in the show notes. This one is in the Journal of Animal Cognition. And they get into all of the evidence that we already know, that chickens can feel, that chickens are intelligent, all of these things. And they also discuss, and this fascinated me a little more, they also discuss the reasons why humans have divorced themselves from this knowledge. Why it's easier for people to not think that chickens are these intelligent, emotive, wonderful beings. So I won't drag all that out, but it's a really good study. Again, that's going to be linked in the show notes, and it is worth reading.
It makes sense, because people have a tendency in human nature to disconnect from something that's going to hurt them emotionally, right? And if they're going to use chickens in their diet, they don't want to have an emotional connection to them. So they discount them and what they really are. Oh, they're not smart. They don't know what's going on. Well, like we said, the studies are out there. They do. They have cognitive thoughts. They have emotions at play. They are very intelligent, loving beings.
Sometimes I think my chickens are smarter than me.
Chickens are smart.
They might, you know, they can be silly and do goofy things, but sometimes I'll do something stupid and I'm like, seriously, my chickens act smarter than me some days. I'm serious.
Well, I had Anastasia on the other day on socials and I had her on my lap and she comes in and we're looking at a seed catalog together and I'm asking her what she likes. And on this page is like cherries, blueberries, peaches, this and that. Well, what she's eaten in the past is blueberries. That's what she's had and continuously went to the blueberries.
You did.
And tried to peck the blueberries off the page. And I was like, is that what you like? And continuously went to those blueberries.
She repeatedly picked the blueberries. She did. It was very, very cute. Yeah.
I have to tell you, in my speech world, if a child is not communicating verbally, we have what you call like a communication device. High tech, you know, it could be an iPad or just pictures. And so if you have pictures out, you're basically doing a communication board or system with your chickens.
Yes. I sat there and asked her, I'm like, which do you like? I mean, it's on our social media. If you want to see it, it's on there. She went for those blueberries every time. Like she went for the blueberries. And I have always about 5 containers of blueberries in my house at all times. So I'm like, okay, well, we have them in the fridge. We're going to get you some. And I took her and got her blueberries and she ate them all up and she was happy. So I'm like, you don't have to eat the paper ones. That's for sure. But it just goes to show you, even for me, taking that time to sit in a chair and rock with her and giving myself a 5 or 10 minute break, it is therapeutic. It does bring about feelings of a little bit more calmness into your life.
And I have to say something that as far as what job roles Poppy and Maisie have when they are in my speech therapy clinic, they have another role because that's typically one-on-one care, right? Well, on Fridays, I'll do about 1 to 2 school assemblies a month because I put my author hat on. So now I'm going into the schools and speaking in front of 400 to 800 kids all at the same time. And when I do that, guess who's with me? Poppy and Maisie. They're in there. Cute little stroller, and I'll have them covered first. And I will do like a video book of either book, you know, any of the books that I have published. And we talk about it. And depending on the age, I've even gone up to 8th grade and done more detailed information as far as authoring a book and then talking more specifically about chickens and how great they are for therapy. But I tell you, they steal the show, Poppy and Maisie do, when we're done reading the story and I'm done doing the introduction and doing a Q&A, and all the children are so quiet and calm. Picture at least 400 or 500 children in a cafeteria or school auditorium just sitting there and just waiting patiently. And I remove the blanket and show Poppy and Maisie inside the stroller. And there's this an eruption of excitement, happiness, love, they're cheering. And most of them have never seen a real life chicken in their life up close and personal. So this is what we'll do. We'll answer questions. I'll lift up Poppy and tell him kind of like all of the information that is relevant for children to know about chickens, about roosters and hens. They're both a chicken, right? You know, those are things that we have to discuss. That he wears a diaper. They absolutely love that. How does he eat? I'll walk around through the auditorium and I'll do the same thing with Maisie. And then at the end, there's usually an award or reward for maybe kids who were perfect attendance or something like that. And so the principal will choose maybe 10 kiddos at the end to stay behind for 10, 15 minutes. Hand sanitize and actually touch Poppy and Maisie, because not every kiddo gets to do that. So they get to be up close and personal. And these children are so enamored by them. So now I've spoken about speech therapy and how chickens can help basically in a one-on-one individual session. Now this is group, large group and that knowledge and seeing them come together collectively and the children have this shared experience of meeting Poppy and Maisie. And I think they all end up going home saying they don't want to eat chicken anymore. They want a pet chicken, probably.
Exactly.
Beautiful to watch. It is really, truly beautiful.
I'm sure it is. I was going to ask you if the kids actually, do they need to make physical contact or is it just enough to be hanging out with the chickens? I guess it's just enough to hang out.
They don't need to. You know, they'll be in a row and I'll have Poppy in my hand and I'll usually have a handler or an assistant holding Maisie and we'll be there and they'll just come individually after they hand sanitize and I'll say one finger right underneath their neck area. And the reason why we do that is kids want to top pet at the top of the head. What do the chickens do? They push their heads down.
If
you rub at the bottom of their neck, Maisie's head elongates and then she's like, looks like she's looking at you. So being able to learn these things, but many kids don't want to touch them. They just want to see. And then Pop makes this noise and Maisie might be purring or trilling and they just are enthralled. They almost have nothing to say because they can't believe they're in the, you know, standing next to chickens.
I've had that same experience because I have a stroller and I take my babies out sometimes too to open festivals and they're always in the stroller and protect it. And people are drawn to us with the chickens and they'll, even adults, I've never seen a live chicken before. And you really don't get that because we're like, really? But there are so many people out there that have not seen a live chicken. And I think once you do, and then you realize you have a totally different perspective on the whole entire thing. You know, it's just an amazing thing. I love that the chickens in therapy can help people and children the most. And you also help children with feeding problems. So you can kind of even put the whole Poppy perspective into it when you're doing your therapy. Say he has a problem also. You're not alone. Yeah. You know, you can use that.
You're exactly right. I'll usually have Poppy in with, let's say, speech and language or social skills sessions. And when I have feeding sessions, they might see Poppy before the feeding therapy or after. And being able to discuss, especially with the parents, because many of the children that I do feeding therapy with, they might be itty, itty bitty. It's not even to the level where we're having back and forth communication yet. But being able to talk with the mom and even the father, realizing people at some level and also animals have issues, whether it's feeding or a diagnosis. But it is very funny for me to say, it's like, oh, you have a chicken here. And it's like, yes, and he's a special needs chicken. Every parent says he's the ambassador to this place. They see him as the ambassador to access speech therapy. But I always like to do a little inside blurb that Poppy was meant to be with me. If I am a feeding therapist, and he couldn't have come to a better person than to feed him. And so I feed Poppy 2 to 3 times a day. And I incorporate very similar skills that I do with the children that I work with. And it works. I mean, we all have a tongue. We all swallow. Our tongues don't grow back like chickens do.
Right.
But they still work and they do that propel motion back to bring food down. And so anyway, I'm going into more detail than I probably want to as far
as great. No, it's great.
That's good.
But being the ambassador for any level of issues there and the fact that I can overlap my love for chickens and my passion for therapy and helping children that have some issue and actually helping the parents, because usually we're the first line of access and being for the next chapter of the parents realizing that they don't have a typically developing child. And so there's this healing and grieving process that has to happen when.
Exactly. I can only imagine that there has to be almost a grieving process to normal. What you're going to have to create a new normal in your life. And that does come with letting go of what society sees as normal. So whether it's your normal, it's fine. But having somebody there along the way, even if it's a chicken that has had to go through that and has their own normal and say, look, this can happen. This chicken lives by the fireplace in the winter. I mean, like, is driving in the car all the time. Your own normal isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just different. And everybody's okay. We're all different. We're all different.
You're exactly right. And also knowing for those that may possibly have a chick that has a crossbeak, it's something where maybe they have a new normal in their life. They want to be able to sustain life and have this chick thrive. It is possible instead of the option of culling. And reaching out for assistance for feeding is always recommended. Give the chick a chance, you know, and see if we can maintain life. And who knows, you might even end up writing your own book and sharing this joy of a special needs chicken to others and the smiles in and of itself that we experienced from people is worth every moment that I spend caring for Poppy, hand feeding him. It is worth it.
Now I have Clover, who was shipped from a very small private hatchery, and within shipping probably received a head injury. And the Clover story, a lot of people know my Clover story. She's a special needs chicken, but she's able to live her life with the flock. She doesn't have to come out, but she's had neurological problems and deficits from the very beginning. And she had failure to thrive. And let me tell you, the first month of her life, I cried many nights, but you never give up. You keep feeding them. You keep giving them the vitamins. You keep doing what you have to do, because that's not an option. It's not an option just to give up on a being. You just keep trying. Exactly. And she did it. She's out there.
She's thriving herself. She really is. I feel like, and my special needs girl right now is one of my Jersey Giant hens who lost use of her legs because of zinc poisoning. And she's seven. Yeah, she's seven. Esther, and she's a wonderful girl, and we weren't going to give up on her. But what I was going to say is, I feel like in my experience, and Chris, I think the same, you're going to say the same thing. Once I got through that morning, my poor girl can't walk anymore. This is terrible. We invented that new normal. So every evening after we put all the chickens in, Pete and I sit down. We give her some supplemental feeding, give her some TLC. She loves her lap time with Pete. She also has outside time in the grass every day. But we built it in. And now we don't even think about it. It's part of our routine.
And having a chicken yourself that has a new different normal is perfect to show people that this isn't the end. It's just a different normal.
Yes.
You have to get past it. And like you said it 100%, I agree with, it's a grieving process, but you got to make it short lived, and you got to get up and you got to say, okay, I'm done. Now this is my new normal and we're going to do this. And having Poppy and seeing the success of what you put in and this chicken, it has to inspire the parents that come into you and say, we're going to do this too. We can do this.
Absolutely. And again, as far as the grieving process, what is the final stage? It's that acceptance. Right. And so whether you have a pet, fur baby, feather baby that has a special needs, or a human that has a level of additional need, there is an acceptance that will end up happening. And once it is, everything in life is just like a piece of cake. I mean, things happen, but guess what? You get through it. Because there's support, familiar support, therapy support, whether it's human therapy or animal therapy.
Right.
So knowing that we have a plethora of things at our fingertips to assist us, and we are not alone. And that is one of the greatest things to remind parents is you are not alone. You have supports, and being able to communicate in support groups with other like-minded parents that are going through the same thing, and they might be in different grieving stages. That's very important. But it always is a happy thing when a child, let's say, says, and they don't have any verbalizations, and they just made a bok bok sound because they saw Maisie. It's just one of those things that it's hard to explain.
It gives you chills. It gives you chills when you hear it.
It's giving me the goosebumps right now. That must be so special. This child was nonverbal, but they were brave enough to communicate with a chicken. That's amazing.
And sometimes it's easier to communicate with animals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It really, really is. I mean, you have decreased anxiety, decreased depression, increased communication, social skills. Basically, social interaction with others just because of the connection with animals.
And that connection of animals is minus any judgment. They're not judging anything. Yeah. And I think that's the key that people know is that's why they have children who are in school or having trouble reading. They have them read. They go to take them to the shelters and have them read to the dogs and the cats and the chickens who are there because they're not going to feel the judgment of somebody else listening to them. Right. So
I got to tell you this because I'm a retired librarian. And we did have the reading buddies every Saturday. And it was the most amazing thing. So what we would do is we would go like back in the book stacks and we would find a corner where no one ever went and looked at the books. And we put a blanket back there and the volunteer would bring in their dog or whatever animal was going to be the reading buddy. And the kids would come in and they were so scared and so shy. They're hoarding their book. And then we'd see them come out 30 minutes later with a great big smile on their faces. It was awesome.
It's what animals do. It's that whole unconditional lack of judgment on you that is just so necessary. And they give that and they're giving people the ability to thrive by doing that. And they're not even trying. They're just being themselves. I love that. It's amazing.
The reading buddies is fantastic. We saw so many kids just come out of their shell and blossom into readers because of that. Tricia, I wanted to ask you something. We talked about this once before and I found it fascinating. So I'm wondering if you take us through it again. There are certain physiological changes that a person's body goes through when they're coming out of an anxious state or they're relaxing. So say Maisie's on someone's lap. Physiologically, what might be happening to them?
Let me put it as an example of a mom who is always at a high level of alert, stress, like high stress. And she's sitting down in session. She gets Maisie sitting on her lap. Petting her heart rate decreases within minutes. Guess what? Petting animals, your blood pressure decreases. Breathing rate regulates. We have an autonomic nervous system, parasympathetic, sympathetic. So when you breathe in, that's your sympathetic side of the autonomic nervous system. That's your fight or flight or freeze. Like, so picture when something scares you, what do? You inhale, you hold your breath. Guess what? It stops your whole system of oxygen intake. So if you picture, we have this little train throughout our body and the system that affects our breathing rate, which then in turn affects our blood pressure, heart rate, stress, anxiety, depression can increase, decrease. So when we're petting a chicken, let's say for an example, and now you're relaxed, guess what happens? When you are relaxed, what do? Oh, sigh of relief, right? That's your parasympathetic nervous system. That's the rest and digest. So as far as breathing rates, when you can regulate your breathing and you're not hyperactively breathing, you get more oxygen to your brain, more nitric oxide, especially when you're nasal breathing, not mouth breathing. All of that ties in to how your body is regulatory. Are you so anxious that you don't even realize that you're holding your breath and you're stressed? How is your breath intake? Is it shallow? Is it deep? Most people breathe on average, 15 to 20 breaths in a minute. Do you know what the optimal breath rate is per minute is? Six.
Wow.
So when a person is breathing shallow, let's say 2 to 3 seconds in, 2 to 3 seconds out, 2 to 3 seconds in, 2 to 3 seconds out, and you're just doing the shallow breathing, do you think you're getting enough oxygen through your blood, your brain? No. In fact, carbon dioxide is increasing so much, and we need carbon dioxide. But if you have an over amount and the oxygen is decreased, you don't know why you're antsy. The foundation is breathing. So if we can relax, and therapy animals assist with that without us realizing it. Mm-hmm. If we can relax and have that chicken on our lap and we're petting them, lo and behold, our breath rate has already calmed. And one additional thing, and this is good for you ladies and anybody else listening. When we breathe, our sympathetic nervous system, when we breathe in, We always want our relax, rest, and digest to breathe longer out. So if you breathe in for 4 seconds, you want to breathe out 1.5 times longer. So most optimal is breathing in, not deep, just slow, low, and gentle, 4 seconds in, and then 6 seconds out. You want your rest and digest breath longer. Otherwise, you're always in alert. Nothing fully relaxes. Everything is an alert stage. And that's why when they call it box breathing, Navy SEALs do box breathing. Why? They want to be relaxed, but they want to stay alert.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The breath is equal. So being able to breathe in gently, but breathe out longer, that keeps you more in the parasympathetic
stage. And I love the fact that the chickens and the animals help you do this without even thinking about it. They're just being themselves, sitting on your lap. And all these things that you just explained to us are happening naturally because of them just sitting there. They bring such a calmness, such an unconditional love to everything. And it is touching. It does give you goosebumps. It does, you know, make you feel all the things. And they're all good things. All really good things.
That's why you have to hug your chickens every day.
That's why we say hug your chickens every day. And we practice what we preach. I'm out there. Mine are like, oh God, here comes mom again. One's on my head. One jumps on my shoulder. I'm hugging one. But I'm telling you, I'm happy at that point. You know, it's calming. Yeah. Having two chickens on my head is calming. It just is. I don't know.
I would imagine that, especially with a silky, the tactile
experience. They're so soft.
Feathers are so soft.
Oh, man. It's always so amazing having you on the show and just catching up with you. And we always say we've known each other for years now, but we do have to get together like in person for real soon.
I promise you that we will.
Right. Well,
thank you so much for coming on and catching up with us today. There's not a better way to spend a Friday afternoon. I'm telling you. It's always so much fun catching up with you.
Thank you so much. And you two are gems of humans and making the world a better place every day.
Oh, thank you. Same right back at you. You teach us something every time we talk.
Every time. You're amazing, Trisha.
Okay. We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We just want to thank Trisha one more time for a really fantastic interview and for being such a wonderful animal caretaker. Thank you, Trisha. You're a very special person.
She is, and such a wonderful friend of the show.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay, so let's move on to
cracking the eggs.
Cracking those eggs. Now, we're taking it simple, but yet good this week.
Garlic mayonnaise.
Would you like to spice up your sandwich just a little bit?
I would like to dip my fries into garlic mayonnaise, thank you.
And would you like to like surprise your hubby and he'd be like, what did you do different to this sandwich? It tastes so delicious.
Pete probably would. He likes some garlic.
Yeah. Joe loves garlic. I mean, we're Italian. I mean, come on. We could like bathe in garlic in cold water right now.
Well, fortunately, I know where you can get some cold water.
Me too. Oh, I got plenty of it. Okay, so let's go through the ingredients to make your garlic mayonnaise.
This is only one egg.
One egg, but right now you could make
You could make like a quadruple batch of this.
Make like an 8,000% batch and be like,
you would be bathing in it then. That's a lot of mayonnaise.
Okay, so let's go through the ingredients. Okay, so you need one large egg at room temperature, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 1 clove of garlic, and you want to finely mince or crush this, 1/2 teaspoon of Dijon mustard.
Pardon me.
Would you happen to have any Grey Poupon?
But of course.
1/2 to 3/4 cup of olive oil, salt to taste, black pepper to taste. And that is it. And you know what? I've always learned that some of the most delicious recipes and delicious foods that you're going to taste are the most simplistic. They don't have a bunch of different stuff thrown in to muck up the flavor. You just need a few things.
You just have to start with really, really good ingredients.
A really good egg.
And a really good clove of garlic.
I'm growing garlic
this year.
Of course.
Of course I am. You know where it's planted?
With the floating lettuce.
No, it's not actually. There's shallots with the floating lettuce. My garlic is planted with the apple trees and the rose bushes.
Oh, the heritage breed apples.
And the heritage breed roses. So you want a medium bowl. You're going to use a hand mixer or a blender. you're going to whisk together the egg, the lemon juice, the garlic, and the mustard.
And I'm sure you can even use one of those handheld emulsifiers. You know what I'm talking about? Like you
a put stick it- blender. I have a stick blender. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do quite like my stick blender, but I tend to use my hand mixer with the whisk attachments on there.
Now, if you want to go old school, you get a rotary one, but you're turning.
You know, they sell them at IKEA. I keep telling Pete, I want one of them in case the grid goes down. I need a hand mixer because I'm not whisking my
hands.
I mean, you're
going to turn super fast. You're going to be like, that's a workout along with making your mayonnaise.
It would be funny to do a video of that. Beating constantly. No matter how you're beating, you're going to beat constantly. You're going to add the oil at first, drop by drop, allowing each addition to incorporate into the egg mixture before adding more. As it emulsifies and gets thicker, you can begin adding a bit more of the oil at a time until it is fully incorporated. Don't rush the process.
I'm sorry. I have to think about that time we tried doing it way a long time ago.
We put way too much oil in. And we were like, just beat longer. Just beat it longer.
No, it was not nope, fun. It was not fun.
Not happening.
It didn't work that time.
So once you do it right, you're going to season to taste with salt and pepper, cover and chill. Now, keep in mind, I hope you're like us and you like garlic. Because that garlic flavor will intensify with each day.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah.
And then you make your hubby something with it, and he's like, oh, it tastes even better today.
That is a gosh darn good sandwich.
Oh, you did it. So you want to surprise him with it, something easy. You go to IKEA and get yourself a hand little beater.
Do it.
You put on like a little
I want one of them.
Bonnet, and you pretend like you're way back.
Well, you got to wear a bonnet, though. I'm not putting a bonnet on. Man,
wear that bonnet, baby. Yeah. Okay, so try it. You might like it. Let's move on to retail therapy. Retail therapy. Yeah. Okay, so this week's retail therapy, we're talking about something that we've actually talked about for a while.
We've talked about talking about it.
But we haven't.
So let's talk about it.
So let's talk about it because it's really cool. And yeah, you can get them. It's vintage chicken feed bags.
Okay. I had no idea that this was such a thing, but it's amazing.
I know.
It's amazing how many, like sometimes, let's look on Etsy. I mean, you can find it in other places, but let's stick with Etsy for now.
We're on Etsy for now.
So you can actually buy vintage feed sacks from like the 1940s and 50s, or you might find them in a quilt.
Or a pillow.
Or framed.
So I first found out about this, I don't know when it was. It was before the podcast, actually. And I was traveling, and it might have been down south. We were traveling North Carolina or something. And we went to like this big farm store, you know, where they have like fruits and the jellies and everything. And I found these framed, what looked like vintage sacks of feed. And they hang in my kitchen. I'm going to have to put a picture on our socials.
You brought me one that was for sheep feed.
And I got the chicken ones.
Right.
So we had been talking for a while. I was like, this is a thing, but it is actually a really big thing out there.
Yeah.
So you can either buy the sacks and then do with them what you like, or you can buy them where somebody else already made them. The other thing is, we should just mention it, feed sacks that aren't vintage yet, people are making them into their own shopping bags.
Oh, yeah, I do that. Yeah.
That's a big thing.
It is. And honestly, some of the Nutrina bags are beautiful.
Yeah, and a lot of these bags, they're beautiful. And why not? I mean, it's just cool stuff. Now, the cutest thing I found on here was someone took a little miniature sack for a dollhouse and put a print on it that was a vintage-looking print for chicken feed.
That's very cute.
I mean, if you're going to have a chicken coop in your miniature dollhouse, it's great.
My favorite part is that we found feed sacks from companies that we know now, but at the time they made grain for animals.
Land O'Lakes.
Right. I found Gold Medal. They make flour.
And Pillsbury.
Pillsbury's, right. And it does make sense. Again, they're still working with grains, just not livestock grain.
Exactly. So why not branch out and use them? And somehow they kind of lost that part of their business. But, you know, going on and finding these sacks, it's cool.
The Pillsbury's isn't colorful. Like a lot of them are very colorful.
No, it's not at all.
But it says Pillsbury's 100 pounds soft wheat mixed feed with ground wheat. And it's just super cool to think, you know, they make our flours, our cake mixes, but they used to feed our chickens.
There's so many ones that were out there that aren't. And it's so funny because, you know, you wonder what happened. And a lot of the sacks were burlap. Okay. So now they're like a plasticky kind of kind of recyclable, but you can make them into things. But back then they were burlap.
The upscale ones are actually on cotton. And a lot of people used to use the cotton ones to make quilts out of.
Oh, I mean, you can make so many different things out of this.
Like, I see one. Now, this is a set, and they're $70, but I'm looking at a set of vintage flower sacks that are a rose print, and it's a very fine cotton.
Well, then you're going to go for it.
I'm not paying $70 for fabric right now. All my fabric right now is coming from the thrift shop.
You're like, don't you want to donate that? Come on.
Yeah, no.
And I like when people make the pillows out of them.
I love the pillows.
Now, Joe, it's one of these things that Joe's always like, we do not need any more throw pillows, which is true.
Well, that's a shame because I'm making you one right now.
I love some throw pillows. I am a throw pillow junkie.
Raise your
hand if you're like a throw pillow junkie.
I'm not a junkie, but I do appreciate them.
I mean, I do put them on the ground when I want to sit down, but I just love a throw pillow. And Joe's like, we never need any more throw pillows.
Nonsense.
You always need one more. Seriously.
You can always fit another one.
You can always do it. Okay. So go on for your 5-10 minute vacation on the internet when you want to be like, oh, I just need to unwind. Let me look this up. And just Google vintage chicken feed bags and you'll have a 5-minute vacation and just kind of cool looking at the different kinds of grains that were out there for the chickens. Red Rose was a big one.
Yeah, there's a lot of Red Rose.
Those are the ones I brought you back and me.
Yep.
And I think it was from more of the South.
That could be. A lot of these are definitely regional.
Yeah, they're definitely. And
Blue Label. Oh, this one's a pillow. Blue Label brand, daily egg laying, mash feed.
And some of them could be replicas. Some of them could be the real thing. But you got to look into them before you buy them. Check it out. It's kind of cool.
It's very cool.
Okay. So should we tell what we're going to be talking about next week?
Next week. Next week, we are spotlighting an all-American chicken and one of our favorites, the Delaware.
We love that tall chicken.
Main topic, we are being joined by our favorite homesteaders, Stephanie Tureau and Michelle Braun. And we're talking about getting started in homesteading. And we're talking about starting small.
I love those girls.
They're awesome. Tiny steps. Cracking the eggs. We're getting tarted up with some rhubarb tart. Retail therapy, we are giving our review of Grubly's water additives.
Something that everybody needs to know about.
Good stuff.
Okay, so what should we tell everybody to do until next week?
Hug your chickens.
Every day and kiss them too. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to see more of us, please follow us on Instagram at Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. If you'd like to help us grow the podcast, please leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to become a patron of the show, please visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. Thanks for listening.